Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to another podcast. We've got a good show for you today. We're going to be talking about some controversial stuff. We're getting into a little bit of politics, which is something that we do on occasion, but there's been some bills brought to Congress here in the state of Iowa recently that are threatening public land acquisition. We're going to get into all of that and much, much more on today's show. But first, let's get to a couple ads. This podcast is brought to you by Woodhaven Custom Calls. At Woodhaven, building calls is not just a hobby, it is real life. They are made right here in the USA. Each Woodhaven custom call is hand-built to an exact standard. If it isn't right, the call is cold and thrown away, not even packaged. So you as the consumer are guaranteed to get the first quality call from a Woodhaven package every single time. Can vouch for the quality of all the calls that they make because we've used them all. They're awesome. That's all there is to say about it. And we can save you 10% off of everything that they sell site-wide with the promo code THP2018. So go over to Woodhaven Custom Calls, check out their turkey calls, buy a few of them, and save 10%. Once again, that promo code is THP2018. Now let's get to the show. Hey everybody, what's going on? I know we just went live last night, but we're doing kind of a special live feed today.
It's one we should have been doing about a week ago, really.
Yeah, we should have done it. Yeah, we should have already done it, but, you know.
It's not too late.
It's not too late, no. Well, things are going to get pretty political on this live feed because we're talking about the public lands issues in Iowa right now. We've had a number of people ask about it. And we've just been trying to do as much research as we can up to this point so that we can speak somewhat intelligently about the bills that they have going on.
And we're still doing research.
Yes. I mean, Greg's got the computer pulled up back there and a bunch of articles. I've got a bunch of articles in front of me here. Jake's reading over here.
Ted's, I mean, really a lot has changed from yesterday to today.
Yes, it has.
But I guess before we get into that, we can kind of lay it all out here.
Okay. The first thing that's going on, Iowa has brought a bill to the House.
Originally, it was two bills.
Two bills?
Yes. It was two separate bills.
Are you sure that they didn't come up with the second one after the first one?
Or was that it? Might be true.
Anyway, well, you might be right. Iowa brought a bill to the House, HF 542, that actually died yesterday. But the bill was essentially designed to remove the state's ability to buy more public land.
Or even allow people to donate it.
Yeah. I mean, it was a bad deal. I mean, real bad.
Mm-hmm.
And before we get into the nature of these bills, I want to give you guys a little bit of context here. Both of these bills, one of them is dead, one of them has passed the subcommittee, right? And is going into the Senate right now.
Greg might know but that better than I do.
Greg, you'll need to talk through a lot of this.
The first one, HF 42, is likely to die. There is very little support, tons of opposition, and it's unlikely it'll pass. It's not officially dead yet. It has until Friday, but it's unlikely that it's going
to
move.
And that was, like you said, due to all the opposition. Yesterday, when they held the meeting or whatever, there was tons of people there in opposition to the bill, and that's the reason that it's basically
correct
not going to go through.
Counties would have been prohibited from expanding parks, wildlife habitat areas, and trails by any amount. Funding the cities and counties have relied on would have been restricted and could not have been used for expansion of open spaces and new recreational amenities, including public museums. The state would not be able to purchase land for state parks, wildlife areas, or strategic water quality projects. That bill would have stripped private landowners of tax incentives for protecting their land by eliminating the charitable contribution for conservation tax credit. And what I'm assuming that says in plain English is that they are trying to eliminate the state's ability and its resources to purchase more public land.
And that's not just scary for us as hunters, but I mean, like, for example, Greg's wife, Mindy, she's not a hunter, but she definitely gets out there and enjoys a lot of different public land
oh, yeah.
t- type things. It's, I mean, there's a lot of people that don't hunt that use public land, so it's not just scary for hunters and fishermen. It's scary for anybody that likes to go outside and enjoy public land.
Yeah, and just to give you guys a little context here, whose idea was this, Bill? Greg, it's mainly the Farm Bureau, and...
Yeah, the Farm Bureau seems to be supporting it, and the Iowa Cattlemen's Association, I believe, have been the two main supporters.
And Iowa Farm Bureau is pretty powerful up here, you know, because obviously ag is a huge business.
It's king.
It's king in Iowa, no doubt. And they believe that private landowners and, you know, essentially taxpayer citizens should have the same right as the state to purchase public land.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the state basically gives incentives to private landowners, like tax breaks and that sort of thing, whenever... Mm-hmm.
And they want all that to essentially just go away.
They want that to go away so that they can have as good or better chance of buying the land as the state does.
So what about, like, the farmers? I think there was a thing where they could allow people to go onto their private land. Almost, like I heard about that last year or 2 years ago.
Yeah, and they've been, that's a different program that the state's using.
The walk-in thing.
And I don't know if this would affect that or not, but it sure sounds like it. I mean, sounds like a pretty far-reaching bill that is, you know, not good. I mean, not good for public land in general in Iowa, especially public land expansion. And that's one thing I want to touch on real briefly here. That I was just looking at, some statistics. I found this at summitpost.org. Basically, shows the breakdown of the percentage of public land per state. Alaska being number one. 95% of the state is public land.
And one thing to remember is the size of the state, too.
True.
That you're talking about. And Iowa is a small state to begin with.
Well, I mean, in comparison to the rest of the states, it's not that small. I mean, it's
in the Midwest,
In the Midwest it is. But Iowa is 47th on the list. It has 2.8% public land versus 97.2% private land. And just to give you guys a little context, Iowa has gone downhill for a number of years now in youth hunter recruitment. We have serious, you know, hunter retention problems. Hunter numbers in general are going down across the board.
And the number one reason for that is always access to a spot to hunt.
Yes.
So, I mean, public land, anybody can go out there, and that's I mean, why people are saying that they're not getting into hunting or continuing to hunt is because they don't have a place to go.
Right. And last night we were just talking about how we loved Missouri because there's so much different public land. We just wish we could film on all of it, you know. But Missouri is up here, number 30th on the list at 11.2%. You know, and I like to compare those two states because they're similar in size. Missouri has more people overall. But, I mean, you'll notice when you look at these big buck states like Kansas and Iowa, Kansas has 1.9% public land. Iowa has 2.8% public land. And they're in the bottom five in the whole country in percentage owned. And now we got bills coming from Farm Bureau that's trying to eliminate the purchase of more of it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a huge problem. I mean, our hunter, like you said, our hunter numbers are already taking a dive. The youth hunter recruitment is trash in the state right now and needs to improve. And this is going to do nothing but hurt that.
No.
You know, access being the number one issue. So.
And I guess if, like, I mean, Nebraska is a low percentage as public land goes. But if you look to the south, like you said, Missouri, I'm sure Illinois is definitely higher, maybe not by much, but then you got Wisconsin, which is like 17%, you said, and then Minnesota, which just has a crazy amount of public land.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, that's a little bit different as you go north, like you were talking about. It has a lot of big forests and stuff like that, so it makes more sense for there to be public land. But basically, all the states around it have more opportunity to go on public land.
Yes. There's just not much here. There really isn't. And this bill is very unnerving, to say the least. Luckily, though, we had tons of support. The Iowa Environmental Council, who's the other folks, Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, there's a bunch of information there. And a lot of conservation groups like DU and Pheasants Forever and stuff, they all went to the Capitol yesterday. Yeah. And
there was hundreds of people
the
there.
I mean, or the, to the subcommittee.
The meeting room was full, they said, and then there was outside the meeting room, there was tons of people gathered too.
Right, which is real encouraging.
Which is why one of the bills already didn't pass.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the
HF 542 did not pass, but the reason why we're doing this today is because SSB 1221 has advanced to the Senate Natural Resources and Environment Committee. And that, you know, the House bill is killed for the time being. But I would say in large part due to the huge opposition, but now they have reconstructed a bill that is not quite as comprehensive as the first one, but it is still very damaging.
Another thing to add is, I mean, it's this is a bill that is going to affect water quality too, isn't it?
I think so, Greg. Is that?
Yeah, that's a concern. I just want to make sure here that I think we'd mentioned that the bill was killed. That's not entirely true.
Oh, it's
They didn't vote on it because of lack of support. Like I said, I think by this Friday is when it would have to pass, but it's highly unlikely that it will because of the amount of opposition that it received.
Okay.
But SB 1221 did pass. Through the on to the next
step, right? Yeah.
Whereas HF 542 did not.
And just so you guys know, they're having a committee hearing on that today at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
So can we post that link that you had up before, Greg? Can you post that in the comments about basically it's a typed out form where you can email what is it, the senator?
Yeah, Iowa Environmental Council, you can take action there. They have pre-written emails that you can send to committee members.
And we'll post that in the comments. You guys can click on that link. And, I mean, we understand that everybody can't go up to Des Moines or wherever it's held at. So, I mean, it'll probably take you less than 5 minutes. And even if you're not from Iowa, if you ever want to come hunt Iowa, send that sucker over.
Yeah. Anyway, I want to discuss the SB 1221 bill. I mean, we already talked about the first one. It's odds are good that it's not going anywhere for now. But the 1221 bill is the one that they're meeting on today at 3, and it's also bad. I mean, they took some of the edge off of it a little bit versus the first bill. But SB 1221 eliminates the use of state revolving fund for public land acquisition for water quality purposes and eliminates the charitable contribution for conservation tax credit. That's not good at all. Basically, the message there, and this is from the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, is the use of SRF, which is the state revolving fund, for public land projects has a history of successful water quality projects that offer multiple benefits. Not only are these lands helping improve water quality and flood retention, they are creating more areas to hunt, fish, hike, and be in nature. I mean, that's a lot of these lakes and stuff that we hunt around. I mean, those are things that are built for water quality purposes and, I mean, all kinds of stuff. And there's thousands and thousands of acres there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've even read before on a lot of these areas. I mean, we've seen it happen. I keep track of it every year, especially in Iowa. I watch for the little sections of land that they add onto mm-hmm. these public areas. And mm-hmm. usually it's a landowner that goes in and sells 50, a couple hundred acres, whatever, to the edge of existing public land. Like they do that a lot out there on the state forest. They'll buy little chunks. And mm-hmm. I think they have like areas of interest that they're hoping to purchase in the next 10, 15 years.
Mm-hmm. There's an area that me and Jake just drove around that was just opened up this year, and there mm-hmm. was a limit of rabbits right by the road.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, and I mean, those are always good spots for us. I mean, like you said, we're always keeping an eye out for brand new spots like that because, I mean, a lot of people don't know about them. So those are spots that have produced for hunting over the years, and I mean, it's not just about hunting. This isn't just about hunting, I guess, either.
No. This is about a number of things. But, I mean, we have a lot of listeners on here that are hunters.
Yeah.
And on the on the grand scale of this, it's not just important for Iowans, but it's important for, you know, everybody across, especially the Midwestern states, these whitetail states that don't have a lot of public land. I mean, this access problem is far-reaching. It's a monster issue, and that is why, like you mentioned earlier, why hunter recruitment is not doing well right now. And we're going to have serious, serious problems in the next 10, 15 years unless we start doing something about it. And the more actions that governments take like this, the more damaging that is going to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of why we started this whole deal in the first place. And that was one of our initiatives, was not just to protect the public land that we have, but to expand.
Yeah, we're basically trying to show that you can be successful on public land. That way that kind of stigma that it's no good goes away. Some more people feel like they can go out on the public land and be successful.
Yeah, more people that are interested in it, the more potential public access we can have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's tons of different ways that you can provide public access. Like Ted mentioned earlier, a lot of these states have initiatives where private landowners can provide public hunting access through different conservation. I mean, the DNR pays them.
Yeah.
Like a hunting lease, essentially. Yeah. And
anybody can go there.
Anybody can go there as long as you follow a certain number of regulations or rules. Sometimes you got to fill out a sheet or something like that. But, I mean, we're for all that. Not necessarily just states and counties buying public lands, but any type of public hunting opportunity.
Well, and how many areas have we hunted, not just in this state, where people at some point just completely donated all their property to the state, and basically this bill would hinder that, wouldn't it?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's tons and tons of public land pieces that we've hunted where, I mean, say somebody passes away and, like, it's in paper that once that happens, like, all their land goes to the state where anybody can hunt it.
Yeah.
And, like, unless they have enough funding, whoever's donating that land for 10 years of maintenance, like, they're not going to allow them to do that. Was that the correct bill, or was that the other one?
That was 542.
Was it?
That was 542. Okay. So, yeah, we've been doing well as hunters, obviously, you know, had all that support yesterday up there opposing 542. But now we need to oppose, or at least we feel that way, 1221 that is getting discussed at 3:00 today. It's a big deal. I mean, we're going to, like I said, this is not going to be something that goes away. They have essentially just repurposed the bill into sort of a backup plan to still try to get some of these measures across. And I mean, the more state funding and stuff that you lose for these types of areas, the less of a priority it is.
Better chance it goes away.
Better chance it goes away. I mean, we're fighting to keep what little we already have, you know, as far as public land goes. It's not much.
So when will we know the results of, like, when it gets decided officially? Or is there not a certain date?
I don't know, Greg. What is that? There's
no specific information on that. I mean, there's still,
I'm sure,
in the subcommittee process, and 542, like I said, is unlikely to make it out of the subcommittee. SB 1221 did make it out of the subcommittee, and it will be discussed today, like Aaron said, at 3:00. I believe the public can be there, but I don't think there's going to be any public input. Like, they won't have the opportunity to, you know, convey their opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's important to, you know, to contact your senator and
call or email.
Yep.
And were we able to drop that link in the comments?
Not yet.
Okay. We'll do that afterwards here. Then you guys can just click on that. And I mean, it looks like it's real easy. Like you said, they got it all typed up for you and you can send that over. I mean, everyone counts.
The bill, similar but not identical, would sharply impede the acquisition by the state, county conservation boards, and cities of land for public purposes. Oh, yeah, according to their supporters and opponents. Yep. Is there any questions that we need to cover? Do you have any right off?
There's not really much for questions.
Okay.
Marshall just said he doesn't hardly see anybody out during youth season, but then during the regular seasons he'll see a lot of adults out, and he's just wondering if we think it's hunter recruitment is down, or do you think they're just taking them to private land and he's not seeing them?
No, it's down. Like, it's that's it's down just in license sales. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yeah, you might be seeing it on public land, but it's coming through in the statistics on the state's end.
It's everywhere.
Like, it's everywhere. It's down across the board. And another big issue is the reactivation thing and retention.
Yeah.
You know, the recruitment in even states like Missouri that have a better, like, youth hunter program, they are getting youth involved at a young age. But then once those youth hunters become old enough to start going out on their own, they're dropping off. So our retention practices are not very good across the board. We've got to fix a number of those. You know, you got to have all three. That's why it's called R3, you know.
What's the third one?
Recruitment, retention, reactivation. So essentially hunters that need to get back into it.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously the recruitment thing is a big deal. You have to have recruitment to start all that, and Iowa's not done well in the past. I mean, there's not a ton of people here, like we said, but access is extremely challenging here, especially for a brand-new young hunter. Very hard.
I guess in our area specific, there's a lot of more public land than a lot of places in the state, but, I mean, if you look at the state as a whole.
Yeah, and we hunted areas every single year that have just been acquired by the state. Mm-hmm. So this directly impacts us as well.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the spots that we have hunted in the past are brand new acquisitions that they would not be able to move forward with if these things pass. At least that's what it sounds like. Anything else?
Public land youth hunt. You ever think about doing that?
Yeah, that would be a good idea. What is your opinion on what needs to be done for our future generations to keep hunting and conservation alive, other than getting children in the woods? We need to just communicate better, Kyle. Overall, we've got to communicate better with one another. We've got to take the moral high ground because we are a minority group amongst people.
I think there's a lot of, I don't know if
in it's politics,
what you'd call it, arguments within hunters. You know, I mean, it's like we're arguing amongst ourselves. So
yeah,
that's just toxic.
We do. My personal opinion is we do way too much of this, beating our chest, and you know, we're constantly fussing over a deer, and it's just not good. Or we're fussing from one hunter to the next on like how somebody hunts and how that's wrong versus how we hunt. And it's just, we got to somehow find a way to get rid of all that crap, because it's not doing us any good as hunters.
That's why, like, pretty much just, I support any legal means of hunting. I mean, I don't really care how you do it as long as it's legal. Like, get out there and have fun.
Yeah, we're to the point now, and it's just going to become more and more evident in the next 10 years where, like, if you're a bow-only person and you're hating on the folks that rifle hunt, you need to stop that. You need to get rid of that because those are hunters too. They just use the land a different way than you do. They prefer to hunt a different way than you. And it's so easy, especially on social media, to get in these big disagreements with folks over these basically not important issues. Well, I shouldn't say that they're not important. They're just not nearly as important as the future of hunting.
Yeah.
But the communication is just, we've just got to get better at it.
Yeah, I mean, why would you want to be a kid getting into hunting if you're getting, I mean, kids are all over social media now, and if you want to post a picture of your buck, but you're too scared to because it's not big enough for your doe or whatever you shot your fawn, why would you want to continue to do that if people are just going to bash you? I mean, that don't feel good.
No. I mean, and they get brought up in these environments a lot of times in hunting culture where it's kind of this competitive feel. Like, you have to shoot a certain size buck in order to be part of the group. Mm-hmm. And a lot of folks don't do that, you know, honestly. They don't mean to create that type of environment. But when you do, especially for a new hunter that's just getting into it, then you basically force them into a goal that is extremely hard for them to attain right out of the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need to be worried about just figuring out which way a deer track goes, mm-hmm. you know, not how many points are on a deer's head or how mm-hmm. old the deer is or any of that stuff. So you got to facilitate that environment for a young hunter, new hunter, whatever.
I mean, I guess that's why we don't focus on, like, the whole score thing, and, like, that's why we started doing the long bird thing.
Right.
It's like, we didn't know what a deer score was when we started hunting. I mean, you knew it was a 10-pointer and it was this wide, but nobody knew what deer score was when they started hunting. But now I think you got kids that are coming into it, which is fine if you have the resources, but you wouldn't want someone to feel like they have to shoot a certain scoring buck if they're just out there on public land trying to figure it out.
Yeah, and one thing I want to discuss here real quick, because that's a good question, Kyle, and I know we spent a few minutes on it here, but another thing that I don't see us doing as a community is trying to understand the opposition. All we do is, and it's very easy to do. I mean, I feel that urge to do it all the time when somebody just opposes hunting or one of these bills comes up, you know, it makes you mad because you're so passionate about hunting. But you need to take a minute and try to understand their perspective, because that is just going to help you when it comes time to communicate with them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a huge deal. Like, a lot of folks, they just look at an anti-hunter and they write them off. They say, oh, you know, I hate that person. I don't want anything to do with them. Well, hear them out. Like,
yeah, I mean,
understand what their thought process is so that you can have a discussion.
If you get all fired up and just start saying whatever you want to them, whatever first comes to mind, you're not going to help the cause at all. I mean, you're not going to change their opinion on it. If you just are real defensive right off the bat, if you try to understand and maybe try to have an intelligent conversation with them, you might be able to change their mind.
Well, I think people like Steve Rinello, for example, who are really good communicators, have shared stories about people like that, you know, either anti-hunters or vegetarians, people that don't understand consuming meat or hunting. And by engaging with them and not, you know, not belittling or bullying them, like mm-hmm. he's been able to at least – help people to understand
yep.
why we hunt mm-hmm. and the benefits of it, and not only the personal benefits, but you know, conservation as well. So, yeah, I think that's a great point. You know, understanding, you know, trying to understand, you know,
both
and
sides.
Communicate, understand both sides, and do it in a way that's you know, not belittling or bullying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I said take the moral high ground if you're a hunter. Because we have such a small group. It's such a small group. You got to
It's not getting any bigger right now.
Yeah. You have to be responsible and lead by example for other hunters and for people that don't hunt and don't do this. So when somebody comes with a bill like this, it's best if we oppose it, but also try to understand what the other side has going on. Like, mm-hmm. try to figure it out. And I know we've come across as being real passionate here, and obviously we are. And we oppose the bill strongly. But there's a way that we can make this stuff work together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a way that we can keep this fund going and still work with Farm Bureau. Just improve the fund and what it does for conservationists and state land acquisition for public land use. And then also try to formulate a plan so that we can care for their interests as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what really takes the work. That's what is hard to do. You know, people get stuck on one side or the other, and they won't cross the middle to try to understand
mm-hmm.
what the other side has going on. And then you just have this hardcore opposition on each side, and it's like this mm-hmm. all the time. It's just a fight. You can't get anything done. Like, that's kind of how democracy works, you know. Democrats, Republicans, that's why you get stuff passed, is because both sides somewhat agree on something, and then it goes through.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep that in mind.
Somebody asked if there's an Iowa DNR recruitment program.
I'm not positive of that. I think there may be.
Yeah,
and they've
seeing...
actually done some real cool stuff lately with the archery programs in schools.
Yeah, that's been huge. I'm seeing that they do have an R3 program here on their website, but I'm not entirely sure if they have any well-organized, like, youth meadow hunts or anything like that, because Nebraska did, and I believe still does, an extremely good job with youth meadow programs. I participated in it for several years when I was back in college, and it was that was awesome. They have an excellent youth archery hunter program, at least they did 10 to 15 years ago. Hopefully it's still going. I mean, they had dozens of kids involved with it, and it was awesome to see these kids, you know, going out with, I don't know if it was one-on-one mentorship, it probably wasn't, but it was great to see these guys who are active in the Nebraska Bowhunters Association taking these kids out and getting them introduced to the sport. And
Wisconsin also does, I mean, they have the youth hunt, but like during turkey season, especially, like, there's the youth hunt, but before that weekend is the learn to hunt, where they'll just take, I mean, they take a lot of inner city type kids, or not even just kids, like adults, grown people that, I mean, if you've never bought a turkey hunting license, basically you go to a class the weekend before the hunt, and I mean, there's a bunch of mentors there, and every single person gets a specific person or kid or adult that they're going to take out for the first time. I mean, we get access to a bunch of private land around there, and we always take new hunters out, and we've done that for a long time, and they do the same thing for deer hunting, and that's before the youth hunt even. So it's just getting people that would probably never get involved in hunting into hunting. And
yeah,
I think that's pretty sweet.
I think from a retention aspect, you know, that's a good way to recruit, but a lot of folks, you know, bring youth in and they set everything up for them, and they, you know, put the blind out, they don't take the kids along necessarily for all of that experience, and they essentially just put a turkey or a deer right in their lap and they shoot it, and that's an awesome first experience. But I mean, I look back to like how I grew up hunting, and it was like that for the first time, but then after that it was hard. Like, we would go out and not get anything a lot of the time, and it was just this very gradual process. Like, my dad, I don't know if he knew what he was doing at the time, but we would go out until I wanted to go to the house, and then we'd go to the house. And then, you know, I'd ask him to go out on blood trails and stuff and just go out on one of those for 30 minutes here and there and look at tracks here and there. And it was just a slowly building interest in it.
Yeah.
So it's not something that you can do where you can just take a kid out, take him hunting and get him a turkey and say, okay, you know, I did my good deed for the
good
year.
Good luck.
Yeah. You gotta help them along. Like, and that's a big reason why we do the YouTube thing and the online stuff. It's because we know a lot of kids are watching this on their phones, you know, after school or whatever, to try to learn how to do these things. So it more equips them to go out with their buddies and try it. It's that constant mentorship that they need. Anything else, boys? Any other questions, concerns?
Colin had mentioned earlier something about taking people who are 25 to 35 years old, you know, essentially about our age, and getting them introduced to the sport, and, you know, that way they get their kids involved if
that's,
you know, when their kids get older. I think that's a great idea too.
Great idea. Absolutely. That's kind of, I mean, mentorship in general is something that has changed a lot in the last 25 years. When we started, we had, you know, adults that took us.
Oh, yeah. I think everybody in this room had a grandfather or dad that was at least somewhat.
Right. And back then, though, like, the rural communities in general were stronger. There was essentially more people living out in the country in these big farming communities and stuff. And nowadays, there's more and more people moving into the cities, because that's where the jobs and stuff have went as manufacturing's dried up and that sort of thing. Tech jobs are in the city. Well, that means that you're getting out of that lifestyle a little bit. So mentorship is much harder for adults to take part in. That's why I think we have to start changing the way we communicate and mentor new hunters through essentially social media. I mean, like I just mentioned a second ago, YouTube, that's how kids learn to do everything now. Like, when you were a kid, you asked your dad or one of his buddies how you chop wood or whatever it was, roof a house. Now you can just look it up online and learn how to do it.
I would say my age is like the age where
yeah, my dad hunted, but, like, he didn't turkey hunt. So, like, I remember being on, like, the bowhunting.com forums and stuff like that. I mean, there's so much information out there now that you don't necessarily need a mentor to learn a lot about hunting. And, like, our videos, we try to put a lot of information out there that's going to help people be successful. And it's not just us. There's tons of people.
Oh, yeah.
They're doing the Hunting Beast, Pinhoti Project.
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of media in the hunting industry is doing it, too, to a degree. We have to, anytime that you're posting stuff, because that's what it all is now. It's all media and content. Every hunter posts their stuff on Instagram or Facebook, or that a lot of them make videos for YouTube, or maybe they make a big hunting show and they're, you know, huge in the hunting industry. Doesn't really matter. When you're communicating with social media and you're posting about what you're doing as a hunter, keep everybody's perspective in mind, because it's not just your friends and family that are seeing that. It's going down the wire to anti-hunters, to people that may oppose hunting. So keep that in mind. Take the high road and be responsible. And
I was talking
put up stuff that
I was talking to Ryan Blakely, I think is his name, from the workshop in Missouri.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were talking about how it's
there.
Super touchy, like recoil with a gun can be real touchy to get a kid involved. If you take them and have them shoot something that's really going to kick, you know, it might put them off from that for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's a lot of things that, and sitting out in the cold and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's just
it's kind a progression.
Of a touchy situation. Or touchy thing.
It's a progression. You've got to make it enjoyable for them out of the gate, but then you've got to just slowly progress them on down the line. You know, it's like, well, maybe we shot a turkey out of a blind this year with a gun, but now we're not going with the blind. And now you got to put face paint on or wear this face mask, and you can't move an inch when that bird comes in. You know, you're teaching them how to hold still. You're teaching them how to react in a hunting situation. When you start kind of taking the reins off of them a little bit. But that's just natural progression, like we've been.
Shane's got a good comment there.
Yeah. Shane Simpson said, you got to make it fun for the youth. It should be as much about nature as it is about hunting. Teach them about plants, animals, let them play and be loud. Don't try to force them to be killers right out of the gate. I think that's real good advice, especially for kids.
I mean, for me, like, what I remember most about growing up hunting is it wasn't about the hunt at all. Like, it was my whole family going to deer. I mean, you guys saw that this year. It was about the whole family going to deer camp. And, like, I got my little cousin there this year. Hopefully,
oh, yeah.
It's going to be the same thing for him. Like, it's the whole experience. It's not just the hunt, if you can make it that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And post about that stuff, you know, when you're creating your content or when you're posting your pictures and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about why you had fun. You know, don't try just to post a score and say, like, look at me and look at how big my buck is compared to everybody else's. Like, how much fun did you have? And what picture encapsulates that? Because then that's just good, honest emotion there, and you can't really go wrong with that type of thing.
Something that always rubs me the wrong way is when people are like, especially when they're hunting with somebody else, it's like, I shot it. I always make a point to be like, you know, we shot it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, with our group, but you don't even have to be there. I mean, usually it's the whole team was a part of it in some way.
I mean,
we're all making decisions together and using each other's information.
Absolutely.
To be successful. And I guess that's, like you were talking about beating your chest before, that's just the scariest thing to me is someone that maybe is watching people hunt in a situation that they're never going to be able to hunt in. I mean, like, we see some really big deer because we're in Iowa, even on public land. Like, it's scary to think that somebody might think that they need to see, like, huge bucks like we see here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that big deer exist pretty much everywhere, but there's definitely not as many of them some places. I mean, that's just a scary thought to me. And that's why we're trying to hunt so many different states, is so we can relate to everybody.
Yeah, and our goals change just constantly, all the time. You know, it's – and it – to each their own. If you want to hunt big bucks, more power to you. You know, if you're an experienced hunter and that's what your goals are, then go ahead. Just keep in mind when you're posting about stuff and you're sharing that, make sure that you tell them that.
Yeah.
And a lot of folks do. Like, we were listening to Andre DeQuisto yesterday,
I mean,
the Hunting Beast guys.
More big bucks than
Yeah, than anybody else. But he says over and over again in that video, he's like, I pursue the biggest antlered buck that I possibly can, and like that's kind of his deal. He wants to kill one that's bigger than the last one. But he says in no way does he expect everybody else to do that.
He says, I know there's plenty of meat hunters out there, and like talking bad about them is not going to help anything. I mean, the video starts out, the podcast starts out about Dan. Dan's just sitting there talking about how he used to just hunt to kill to feed like their family. They had a huge family, and I mean, they weren't brought up in a – I mean, he just hunted for food. And, I mean, he's graduated to what he's graduated to now, but
– Right. Yeah, and Dan's sitting there, good friends with Andre, interviewing him in that, and has a different approach than him. Like, doesn't – he just wants to kill nice bucks instead of the biggest buck in the woods. You know, and it just goes down the line from – every hunter has a little bit different. That's the great thing with hunting, is you can make it your own. You know, you can shoot whatever the heck makes you happy that day. I would encourage anybody to do that. If you get excited and something comes in, by gosh, don't be thinking about what everybody else is going to think if you shoot that deer. You shoot that deer if you want to. You know, if it gets you excited, and that's what's going to keep you coming back to the woods, is that adrenaline rush. And if it gives it to you, then take it.
Kyle Thiel had a comment earlier about how would you go about bringing somebody over from the dark side to hunting. I guess we touched on this a little bit, but it got me to thinking about Mindy when I first met her and we started spending time together. She, I wouldn't call her, I wouldn't have classified her as an anti-hunter, but I wouldn't, I don't, she wasn't real keen on it. Like, I don't know if she really understood it or would have supported hunting, like when it came down to voting on something. So, you know, as we started spending time together, I just took her with me and just kind of
explain things.
And, yeah, she started to see that there was way more to hunting than just killing. It was, and got to just understand it better. And by taking her turkey hunting, deer hunting, and pull up a picture here. So, I mean, this was the first year that we started hunting together. I think she was with me when I shot a turkey. She filmed me shoot a turkey and a deer. And then, you know, after that, I think within the next couple of years, she actually tried her hand at turkey hunting and went out a few times. And, you know, we had some fun encounters, but she never shot anything. And since then, she just doesn't feel like she can kill something. But she understands hunting. She supports hunting.
Heck, and Greg, you proposed to her when you rode on an antler.
That's right.
Yeah.
And she found told me
the story about
woods.
That.
You got the story on that? Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, she got in. She kind of understood the deer hunting culture, the hunting culture, and why it's important to me, my family. And
why it's important for conservation.
And conservation, too, because she loved wildlife growing up. Like, she's been a zookeeper. She works at a vet clinic. She's always loved animals and conservation. But, you know, like I said, before she met me, she didn't really support the hunting side of it or understand the hunting side of it. So, you know, we talked earlier about, you know, engaging people in a constructive way and you know, possibly just taking somebody that doesn't understand hunting, take them hunting with you.
I mean, that's what it is almost every time, I'd say, for someone that is opposed to it. It's like they probably don't understand all the reasons that hunting can be good and all the things that it does for conservation too.
Yeah, and you can't like preach at them about it.
You just
you got to try to hear what their perspective is first, and then you can try to explain yours, and then, like Greg said, take them. There's a lot of people that like might be vegan or vegetarian that don't support hunting, but a lot of those types of people support environmental stuff, and they want to go out hiking in the woods, and they love wild animals and wild places and all this. Like, you have that in common with them. I mean, that's a huge, huge component to start the communication. You know, I mean, most of the time we don't even shoot anything when we go out there. We're just having fun in the woods, which is no different than what a lot of them are doing. So if you can find some common ground there and then begin the conversation, it's all good things from there. Just can't be abrasive right out of the get-go. I mean, you got to try to understand everybody else's perspective in the world. They're just as entitled to their opinion as you are with yours.
Yeah, not like somebody. Just, I just see the words original, no. Organic.
Sorry.
Like with the whole movement to be organic nowadays, I think that's some sort of common
ground. That's a really, really strong argument as well. Yep.
I mean, I know that there's been a lot of people that have got into hunting just for that reason. You know, I mean, they might not even want to kill something, but they like meat, and like they know that that's the most ethical way to do it. You know.
I found another picture of Mindy and I. This was from 2004.
Turkey.
You look like kids. Yeah. But
what else we got for questions, boys? We better wrap this up.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I guess maybe the people that just joined, maybe go back and listen to the beginning of the podcast. Cause
yeah, to wrap up.
We haven't talked about what the actual idea behind the podcast was in probably 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah. To wrap up, the Senate in Iowa, I think it's a Senate committee that has a bill right now. It's Bill 1221 that they are meeting on at 3 o'clock this afternoon. And we need to take action. They're trying to remove the state revolving fund money that is used for water quality protection programs and benefits conservation. It also benefits the state and other agencies when they are trying to purchase land from landowners. It gives a lot of landowners benefits and tax credits and stuff for selling land to the state to make public. So if you want... If you want to keep Iowa's departments buying more public land, you need to support this bill.
It's good things for hunters and people that like to enjoy public land.
Take action, Iowa Environmental Council. Right now, there are pre-written emails there that you can send to the committee members, and there's a list
of all the
members on the committee that are in charge of this bill. So, check it out.
Thanks for joining.
See you guys.